Oh, hi. This is Cindy Howes from Basic Folk, and here's what's happening on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. Only Vans, a Texas country music pod with rock star host Bree Bagwell, recently welcomed Matt Hillier.
You sang a song nobody had ever heard, and you kept going, come on, everybody, sing it with me.
You know the words.
You know the words. It was the best.
On Basic Folk, honest conversations with folk musicians, myself and co-host Lizzie Noh recently featured John Moreland.
Some of the lyrics are like, you seem to know some things you must have overheard. It sounds like it's talking about a lover. A couple minutes into the song, he's talking about a smartphone, and it just creeped me out so hard that I got a flip phone too.
Oh, wow. And finally, the String Dusters' Travis Book is hosting the Travis Book Happy Hour, live music and conversation from guests like Trey Hensley.
Just listening to Earl Scruggs play the banjo or play the guitar, you always knew it was him. There was always those people that played, and you immediately, within a few seconds of hearing their instrument, knew it was them.
Hear it all and more on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network or wherever you get podcasts.
Thompson Guitars makes handcrafted instruments in Oregon and is a proud sponsor of the Travis Book Happy Hour. Their guitars are built with select tone woods, including Brazilian rosewood. Go to pktguitars.com for more information about their different models and appointments available from their custom shop.
This is Chris Pandolfi from the infamous String Dusters, inviting you to check out my podcast, Inside the Musician's Brain, where we dig deep into everything that goes into a life in music. Season 5 is airing now, featuring talks with Ani DiFranco, Jerry Douglas, Mary Chapin Carpenter, Amigo the Devil, and many more excellent guests.
I have no idea how long it went on. All I know is when I came back, I didn't know who I was.
I've been long captivated by the tension between stories, their ability to set us free, and also their ability to entrap us.
If I allow it to open up possibilities rather than destroy others, I'm using it as a tool.
And you start getting deep into songwriting and you're like, that's the power of song, is that other people can sing them. It's not just for me.
Welcome to the Travis Book Happy Hour Podcast. I'm Travis Book. This episode is brought to you by Thompson Guitars, makers of fine instruments handmade with love in Sisters, Oregon. The podcast is presented by Americana Vibes and the Bluegrass Situation, and our show is part of the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. You can dive into all things roots music anytime at thebluegrasssituation.com. As much a mystic as a musician, Phoebe Hunt makes music that speaks to the yearning we all have to connect with something larger than ourselves. A deep commitment to making music with meaning is her compass, and she's an example of what it means to be in loving relationship with music. We need more musicians like Phoebe Hunt in this world. This episode was recorded live at 185 King Street in Brevard, North Carolina on April 23rd, 2024.
From 185 King Street, the backyard of Brevard, North Carolina, it's the Travis Book Happy Hour. Brought to you by Americana Vibes and the Bluegrass Situation. Tonight, featuring special Happy Hour guest, Phoebe Hunt. And now, your host, Travis Book.
Thank you, Bill.
Why we worry, tell me. Why we cry and tell me. Can we live together without pain? Burdens at our doorstep, burdens in our heart. It's time to let them travel, lay them down. From the tallest mountain down in the lowest valley, we're all asking and we want to know. Why we're climbing, tell me. Why we're falling, tell me. Where we're going, yeah, we want to know. Right. Coming and it is not promised, but it's all we know. Can we quantify it? Can we try and name it? Try to fight it while we hold it close, right? Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Phoebe Hunt.
Oh, hang on a second. I just remembered something.
He's going to turn off the cooler so we get a little of that noise reduction.
But don't let me forget or all the beer goes bad.
Don't let him forget to turn it back on after the show.
Don't let me forget if the beer goes bad. Isn't that nice?
Wow, I'd kind of become accustomed to it.
Yeah, it's a little bit like it's like childhood trauma.
Yeah, you don't know what's happening until it's over.
Yeah, and then it just sort of lives on in the background.
Until you figure that out.
Right. Therapy, right?
Therapy.
That's what they tell me. Okay, I'll look into it.
Well, you know, songwriting is therapy.
Okay. What are you saying?
We could have a whole conversation tonight about how songwriting is therapy.
Okay.
We don't have to, though.
No, that's exactly what I'm looking for, actually. But maybe we should play a song first.
Totally.
Okay.
This song is therapy. For those women who are called Linthead girls. Do y'all know them? Linthead gals move from the farm into the cities during the Industrial Revolution. And there's a great songwriter named Sean Mullins who happened... Yeah, y'all know it. Woo! Sean Mullins.
Y'all are hip.
Yeah, beautiful. Y'all are great. He happened to be hanging out at one of my mentor's houses in Nashville, and I was there hanging with bunch of my buddies, Kyle Welch, Heather Robb, Dom, my husband, and we were writing songs that day, and Sean Mullins walks in with his cigar, and he's like, what are y'all doing in here today? We're like, we're trying to write songs. Feel free to join us. And we went out back, and we started looking at the kudzu in Nashville, and he was like, I think he started telling us the story of his grandmother, who was a Linthead gal, and it somehow tied into kudzu, and I can't remember how right now. But, so I went and got my journal, and this song is about Sean Mullins' grandma. I'm bound to be a Linthead gal. I'm gonna change my world. mercy and of glory, of mercy and of glory. Therapy.
Yes, therapy. Off to a good start.
Oh, yeah. We're just going to kick right into this next one, no story.
Okay. Before we go further, can I ask you just a few questions? Pick sure. your brain just a little bit?
Sure, Travis.
You grew up in Austin, Texas.
Yes.
What an auspicious place to
you
come
got
from.
Austinite back here? Woohoo, hook 'em. Anyone else? Austin? Oh, we got some Austin in the house. Keep it weird. Keep it weird. Love that.
Wild. A lot of Texans in here right now. The Coloradan in me is a little uncomfortable.
Well, the kind of Texans that flew to Colorado to ski are different kind of Texans than the people that live in Austin. We drove.
Was music a part of your house growing up?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, were your parents play?
My papa.
Awesome.
Yeah, my papa has a master's degree in classical guitar.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, real serious musician.
Cool, how does he feel about you being a serious musician?
Oh, he's super into it.
Of course he is.
Yeah.
He must be so proud of you.
He drove me every Saturday to UT in Austin for the Strings Project. That was a program that ran Suzuki music every Saturday from 9 a.m. to noon. And you did group lessons and theory and
awesome
orchestra kind of practice. And I did that from first grade till junior year in high school. And then for my senior year, I wanted Saturday mornings back.
Give me my life back. You started playing violin. Is it okay if I call it a violin?
Sure.
And we can get to that later if you want to talk about that. You started playing at six, and your playing embodies like so many styles of fiddle and violin. I get the sense that you can kind of sound like everyone from like Grappelli to Clements to Kershaw. How did you go about learning and developing all those styles?
That's so sweet.
Yeah, it's always good to you flatter your guest.
Yeah, I don't even know how to handle that one.
That's the idea. Yeah, how did you... Is that just sort of like, do you make a conscious effort to play stylized, or do you just sort of, because of all the music you've played, do you just sort of fall into these things naturally?
At this juncture?
Yeah.
Now I just try to serve the song.
Right.
So now I'm lucky to get to kind of switch gears without thinking about it too much, but there's been periods of life where I've just like studied different types. So I was pretty much classical growing up. Suzuki is a different kind of classical, but it's still classical.
Is that like ear-train classical?
It's an ear-train classical, which is similar to the folk fiddle world that you learn by ear. So I had learned by ear as a child, but I also learned to read music. And then I got interested in jazz in high school when I went to the Lake Lucerne Orchestra Camp for the summer, and I was so excited. I saved my money.
Whoa.
And had to pay for it myself.
Wow.
And it was a 6 weeks sleepover camp up in Lake Lucerne, New York. And we went, you know, it was like an intensive kind of classical orchestra thing, but there was a jazz section to it. And so that was my first jazz band, was like, oh. And so improvising kind of started around 17, 18. And then my dad was a folk, he plays all kinds of music, but he had a book like this thick that's like 3 inches. Actually, has 2 3-inch books, A through N and M through Z, of like covers of Dylan and the Beatles and
whoa,
all kinds of songs, you know, Tom Petty, and just, and he would just be the dude at every family party we went to, just playing in the background. So I got my fiddle out with him starting in middle school and would be jamming along to him, really just playing long notes along with the bass note, because it was written there on the chart thing.
Yeah, that's where it starts.
So that's where it started. And then it kind of evolved into some jazz improvisation in late high school. And then in college, I went to UT. I was a business major, but I was in the UT Symphony for majors and took the jazz ensemble class at UT also. So I kind of continued my jazz studies.
Yep.
But then I got into a folk band.
Yep.
And I went to my first fiddle camp.
Oh, great. And that's when you started to play fiddle.
Yeah, I was 22 and I went to the Mark O'Connor Fiddle Camp. And that's where I met like all of our friends, like Alex Hargraves and Brittany Haas and Casey, why can't I remember his last name right now?
Dreesen,
thank you.
I love how you're trying to remember Casey Dreesen. You're trying to remember his last name. And so you pick up your fiddle and you start chopping it, which is like so good because we've had Casey here and you know the deal.
Yeah, he's amazing.
That's so awesome.
I learned to chop from Casey and then Daryl Anger, and just all our friends were there. It was just Rashad Eggleston, and
yeah,
it was like boom, 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 everyone in one place. And I was like, wizards!
Yeah.
Who are exactly these wizards? Like, what rock have they been hiding under my whole life? Like, my entire life changed after that moment, and I went back to my folk band in Austin. I was like, guys! And I fell into the, I wanted to jam so bad at fiddle camp, but I had never jammed before. I had this so itch. I was like, I am going to jam. And I just like kept walking up to every circle. And there was like the bluegrass circle where it was like Mark O'Connor kind of like battling all his students. In this very intense, like...
Checks out.
Bluegrass. I don't mean to say any... But it was, like, really fast. I'm like, no way I can jam in that circle. And then there was, like, an old-time circle where there's all these people playing the same song.
Yeah.
And I didn't know any of those songs. So I thought, well, I can't really play in that one. And then the Irish one over here was playing Irish reels. And I like, well, I don't really... Can't really play those. And then Johnny Gimble was there. And his son, Dick Gimble, and they had all the charts because they have Dick Gimble wrote that book, Swingin' Numbers.
Yeah.
And Alex Hargraves was sitting in that circle, and he was 14, and he had a spot next to him. And he's like, you can sit here if you want. It was like a very Forrest Gump moment.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. And I kind of had heard some of those songs, like, you know, Lady Be Good and...
Yeah.
Minor Swing, and I just had I had some understanding of that stuff. And deep within my heart lies, I'm a Texas girl.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I can sit here.
Right.
And they let me jam.
I found my people.
And
temporarily.
Yeah. So I got back to Texas after that, and I told my folk band, we got to play Texas swing music.
What did they say?
They said, that's novelty. We play originals in this. Because they were two songwriters who had just both won the Kerrville songwriting contest. And I was the chick who played fiddle and sang harmonies. And they really didn't want me to do anything other than play fiddle and sing harmonies with them. And I met this band, the Belleville Outfit.
Right. I was going to say, that must have led you to the Belleville Outfit. Because that's when we met. We figured it was probably like 17 years ago.
Totally.
When we were playing shows together. The Dusters had just started and Belleville Outfit was out there. And I remember... I've got it written down here. I said we first crossed paths in the Belleville Outfit era. I thought you all were so hip. That's what I wrote as my notes because I thought you guys were like the coolest. Who was the piano player in that band?
Connor Forsyth.
Yeah, he was way cooler than me.
He's so cool.
Is he still cooler than me?
He's really now he's a luthier now.
Oh yeah, that's cooler.
He's really cool.
That's awesome.
He's really cool.
Anyway,
that band wanted to play swing.
Yeah. What do you?
So all of a sudden, I started playing gypsy jazz and swing with the Belleville Outfit, and they were like, "Let's go!"
Yeah,
and
you
met
were
the
off.
Dusters, and we jammed all the time.
Used to jam all the time
because all I wanted to do was jam.
That's all we wanted to do too. I still like to jam.
That's where I learned how to play other styles was jamming.
Yeah, jamming
in the campgrounds with you and anyone who'd let me sit there.
What to you is the difference between violin and fiddle?
Strings.
I saw he's also from Texas. Haynes? Warren?
Warren.
Not
Warren Hood?
Warren Hood, sorry.
Who was one of my main influences?
I got my Warrens mixed up. I saw a video where he said it's the difference between violin and fiddle is how you roll your R's. I thought that was so good. So I want to share that with you.
But it's really an oral tradition is what the difference is. The fiddle comes from different... it's an oral tradition. My mini TED Talks is that all around the entire world, the fiddle is the instrument that sounds the most like the human voice. And that's why you have the Irish fiddling that sounds kind of like the way they talk in Ireland.
Oh, yeah.
And the Appalachian fiddling kind of like sounding like the way they speak in the Appalachia. And Texas fiddle kind of has the drawl like Texas drawl.
And Indian fiddle.
An Indian fiddle. Indian classical fiddle.
Did you say it sort of sounds a little bit like kind of how they talk?
Yeah.
That is a profound observation to me. I just wanted to repeat that. Speaking of Indian... Your given name, this is probably not even Indian, it's Sanskrit. Your given name is Shanti Phoebe Hunt.
Totally.
Awesome name, by the way. Shanti in Sanskrit means peace. Do you feel like you're living up to your name? Why is that an O? Come on! That's supposed to be funny.
My mom said that, okay, this is where it kind of came from, is when I was born, I didn't cry.
Whoa, how lucky, until when?
I don't know when I'm sure I threw tantrums eventually, but...
I mean, you started to cry.
Like the night I was
Because you almost cried today for a minute.
I cry a lot. I am an open well. I was already crying on stage once at least tonight, but that night that I was born, I didn't cry. So my mom felt like I was Shanti.
That's so cool. How did spirituality manifest in your family and growing up? Was like spirituality part of it, or was it more of sort of like kind of teach their own? Or did you practice? Was it a spiritual household?
My dad and mom both say many paths all lead to the same, many rivers all lead to the same ocean.
Right. They're all fingers pointing at the moon.
All fingers pointing at the moon. And sure. My parents met at a yoga ashram and had lived there for 7 years as renunciates, which means you give up all your household possessions.
Right.
And you shave your head. And they lived with and as disciples of Swami Satchidananda.
Oh, yeah.
Who is the guy who opened Woodstock and talked about the power of the vibration of sound as a healing force on earth. And he was their teacher for 7 years. And they had actually devoted both. It was a non-romantic life. They were both disciples living in the ashram. My mom was the house mother, so she made all the food. She ran the kitchen for like 200 people every day. Wow. And my dad was the director and the house musician. So Swami let him keep his guitar, his classical guitar. And wow. So he was able to play. He played at meals.
Wow.
Yeah.
And aren't you glad that they gave up their renunciant lifestyle?
Totally.
Because you
I would not be born.
You can't really have you.
I wouldn't exist
in renunciation.
And I think, my dad left first and then my mom left and she didn't really have anywhere else to go. She was so young when she went to the ashram and then she ended up, I think my dad sent her a plane ticket to Dallas, Texas, and she went there and the rest is history.
It's amazing. One more question and then we'll get you to play some fiddle or violin, whatever you want. It's totally up to you how you roll your R's.
I love Warren. That's such a sweet thing that he said.
Isn't that amazing? I thought that was like the best. But then what you said about each style sort of mirroring the way that people talk, and which is sort of an extension of sort of like the sound of the culture, I just think is so fascinating. I'm going to unpack that on my own time. Do you spend a lot of time like sort of considering your place in all of this? And like, are you on a mission? Like, have you got a mission? What would your mission statement be?
Music is medicine.
Music is medicine and therapy. That's Phoebe Hunt, everybody. We're going to get her to play a little fiddle for you.
Thank you.
Okay, now I get to go off script if I want to. I can't really, when I do my solo shows, I very rarely can stay on script. But this song is for those who might be galloping from one thing to the next constantly. Anyone like that here? Yeah, just one thing, straight to the next. Maybe you've given that life up. Maybe that was you in a past moment, but that's not you anymore. Horse to the barn, running and sweating, galloping the whole way home if I let him. Who's in control, rider or beast? Will I ever make it home for the feast? Did you make it back for your silver platter full of fine rewards for all that glorious clatter? Shelter and the grain calling your name to the place of the known and the familiar same. Are you running so fast that you're flying away? Have you found eternal freedom in the setting of the dawn of the day? Curiosity begun beyond the setting of the sun. And I run like a horse to the barn, running and sweating, galloping the whole way home if I let him. Who's in control, rider or beast? Will I ever make it home for the feast?
Thank you.
so fast that you're flying away. Have you found eternal freedom in the setting of the dawn of the day? Curiosity begun beyond the setting of the sun. And I run. Like a horse to the barn, flame to the stable, galloping the whole way home if I'm able. Who's in control, rider or beast? Will I ever make it home for the feast?
If you're enjoying this show with Phoebe Hunt, check out episode 1 with Lindsay Liu, episode 18 with Christina Vane, episode 23 with Alexa Rose, or episode 27 with Rachel Bayman. Thanks for listening, and after the show, be sure to leave a rating and review. Now back to the show.
Sometimes you just have to fly on, and I really wanted to travel the world and see things, and I had always had this kind of deep desire to check out India, probably because of my parents and the whole yoga thing. And so when I ended up not being a part of the Belleville outfit anymore, I actually joined Ben Soli. Do you guys know him? Yeah. I became his auxiliary chick for a couple years and played fiddle and some bass randomly and sang harmonies. And then one day he invited me on one of his bike tours. And at that moment I realized that's what his passion project is. And I had a passion project inside. And my passion project was to go to India someday. And so I said, you know, Ben, I love you. You've taught me how to be free. He's such a free human being and expresses himself so beautifully. And I'm going to use my newfound freedom to go to India and check things out for a little while. And he was so supportive and said, go fly on, little birdie. And and now I've been there twice and had a couple trips. And each trip I write a song. Or there's one song that seems to have come from each trip, but I won't play both of those. But I'll just do one of them from the second trip, which was when I did a Vipassana meditation retreat, a 10-day silent meditation retreat, followed by a 14-day, two-week study with master violinist and vocalist Kala Ramnath, who's an Indian master at Indian classical violin and voice. Really incredible. And she said, bring your friends. I'm not meaning to patronize her in any way, but she said, come, bring your friends. So I brought 10 friends from New York, and we all went, and we did a 14-day study, and it was really special, and we just did like 10 hours a day of practicing, and so I woke from my silence into that. But the lyrics for this came from the Vipassana. You might imagine me never stopping talking, sitting here just yapping away, but... the lyrics came from that Vipassana where I wasn't supposed to be thinking about anything. But somehow these lyrics came in the cracks, and I just did my best to catch them. And on day 10, I ran to my journal and wrote them down. And then when we went to the music study portion, maybe on day 7, the music for this came. So it kind of incorporated some of what we had been learning into the song. So I call this Pink and Blue. And when I got back to Nashville... the group that had gone to India with me, a lot of those guys, I had become brothers. They'd felt like brothers. My husband was among them. And I said, I'm not leaving New York, because I lived in New York at the time. I'm not leaving New York until I record an album, because we just practiced so much, and I'm not going to really be this practiced again for a while, probably. So I didn't want to waste that practice we had done. And so we recorded an album. And this song, I feel like, kind of is the cornerstone of that album. It's called Shanti's Shadow, and I recorded it with a band of gatherers. I called them Gatherers, Phoebe Hunt and the Gatherers, and we traveled around for a couple years after that, and it was such a special moment. But this is that song called Pink and Blue. Thank you. until they bleed. Taking the moon on a bended knee. Stare at the sky in the morning light. Pink and blue are the color of God's eyes. There's a bell that rings when the school day ends, but that's not the bell that rings for me. Sitting here till I make amends, sitting here till I am free, only then will it ring for me. This childish pain, help me see the endless change. Running again and again I stray, but from what do I run away? Burning off this childish pain, help me see the endless change. Help me see the endless change.
I was supposed to play that with you, but I can't count. Like, I can't, I could not, I couldn't, I couldn't.
Well, we only had 1 2-hour rehearsal to learn all these songs.
And you were so sweet when I was trying to figure it out. You kept trying to show it to me. You're like, you know, it's just in 7. You just got to count that section in 7. And I was like, okay. I was like, "Can we get a drummer or something? Can I get a little help here?" Do you mind if I just ask you a couple more questions, and then we'll get back to playing music? Everybody,
are you guys okay with that?
Once again, Phoebe Hunt. I mean, isn't she fantastic? I love that song so much, and I always have. I've loved that since the first time I heard it. And it really makes me sad that I couldn't figure out how to play it. So the next time I'll get that one.
It's also in A flat.
Thank you.
Just in case y'all were, it's like.
That's not really like a bluegrass picker's key, you know?
No.
Like if I'd have gone to school and studied jazz, maybe I'd feel a little more comfortable in that key. However, I didn't. I just studied bass at festivals.
It's a good place to study. That's why you sound so good. And you got a good vibe, which is all that matters.
Have you always written songs?
No.
When did you start?
I started in my room when no one could hear me, probably in high school. Processing some emotions.
Oh, that's the thing to do.
Therapy.
Yeah.
But no, I didn't show anybody that, and then I didn't really do it professionally. When I played in that band, the Hudsons, they were both songwriters, and so again, I wrote kind of in the closet, And then the Belleville Outfit was the first band that I played with that was like, do you have any songs you want to play?
We need songs.
Oh my gosh. I was really grateful that they let me play my songs. And then it really snowballed. I went to another summer camp. I'm just plugging all the summer camps because I'm obsessed with camps. And I feel like camps are how I really changed as a musician, because I applied for the Johnny Mercer Foundation songwriting camp, which happens in Chicago. And that's when I really got serious about songwriting. I went there. They only accept 12 people a year, and it's free, and they give you a little stipend for your food, and they give you your lodging. And it's, you go and you get to be in this immersion of songwriting with three incredible coaches, and you're just, it's like songwriting circle and intense feedback all day. And I must have written 14 songs that week.
Amazing.
Because and they gave you each your own dorm room, so you weren't distracted by a roommate.
Yeah.
And in my room at night, I would just be like, it just, something opened that weekend.
That's beautiful.
And it was like, pah! And yeah, I just, and it's closed and opened since, but sometimes it just pours out and you can't help it. And you just, if you can just catch it, you're lucky.
Yeah, my next question was going to be sort of like, what is your process like? Is it being open and recognizing when it's coming, listening for it and creating space, and then being prepared to capture it?
Absolutely. And surrounding myself with other people who like to do it. Because when you're around other songwriters and you're talking about songwriting, this channel opens, you know? And so I've done my best to immerse myself with a group of people, my friends, my community, who love songwriting. And that's my social hang in Nashville. Mm. I don't really go out to bars. I've kind of did the fiddle in bars thing in my 20s and in my 30s. And now I'm like, I'd rather hang at houses and just write songs with my friends. So when my social out, you know, I'm like working on my online course at home. And then I'm like, I want to do something social. Maya, can we write a song today? Or, you know, list goes on of amazing songwriters in Nashville. So if I can just hang with a friend, have a cup of tea, and write a song that afternoon, life is good.
You mentioned Maya. That's Maya DeVitri, right? Okay,
yes.
And this is perfect, because there was a song that you wrote. It must have been a couple of years ago now, and it's. There's a great writer, I've known him for, 20 years, Craig Havokhurst, and he says, he's Nashville, he says it might be an American folk standard. It's this song called Nothing Else Matters. And the first place I heard it was on Lindsay Lou's record, because I'm just a huge Lindsay Lou fan. She was my third guest on this show.
I love her too. So
and
much.
I'm probably going to have her again. She'll be my first repeat, because I just adore her. But she recorded this song, and at first, of course, anybody else, you hear a song, the first assumption is well, maybe that artist wrote it. And imagine my surprise to realize that it was actually much juicier than that, that it was written by you and Maya. And Maya's on my list to come here. She had to turn down a September date. She was going to join me to sort of close the circle.
She's phenomenal.
I can't wait to have Maya DeVitri, but that...
They're my two best friends in Nashville are Lindsay and Maya.
You're so lucky. They're amazing. So, this we'll play this song before the night is through, but will you tell us a little bit about that song, Nothing Else Matters, and about the process around that? Because I do think... Sorry to interject. I just interrupted you. I do think that it is going to be considered kind of one of those folk standards that people will be playing around campfires and that kind of thing. So... I think it's acutely interesting to me how that song came about.
That's incredible. I have always had a dream of making an album of songs that people would play around the campfire.
Yes.
I had it, and actually Lori White, Cannon, who I met at the Full Circle, I met her at the Johnny Mercer camp. She was my mentor that came out of that. That's whose house we were at when we wrote Linthead. We were dog sitting for Lori.
Amazing.
She's now passed since. But I told her this idea. I wanted to make an album, Songs for the People. Songs that everyone could play. Not all of my songs are songs for the people.
No, definitely. I can attest to that. I tried like hell to learn Pink and Blue. Did not happen. Not even close, turns out.
But how cool would it be to like have an album like Johnny Hartford style where people are playing the songs and just to kind of refresh that catalog of songs that people just know and somehow in the cosmos that people just know and that Woody Guthrie vibe. And you start thinking of song and you start getting deep into songwriting and you're like, that's the power of song, is that other people can sing them. Yeah. It's not just for me. Like I've kind of now scratched a lot of the surface on songs that I really needed to write for my own therapy and my soul. And I hope I'll probably keep doing that the rest of my life because that's what I have to do to survive. But and some of them are complex, but I just think how cool would it be to be a part of a collection of songs that are for the people. And so this song kind of has become that in some way, and it's really fascinating. It came from me grieving my band, The Gatherers, who I love so much. But I moved to Nashville, and then there was a pandemic, and everyone moved away from New York, and we had been living in that same house, kind of doing the very much the dream, living in the house, like learning songs like Pink and Blue and right. Just arranging and just having that soup of creation together. And it was so special. And then I was an adult and my husband and I had an opportunity to buy a house, things like that change your path. And I felt really bad grieving that because I felt like it was very much a white person problem, even though I'm light brown skinned. And Maya came over to write with me, and I was telling her how I felt because we're just very honest with each other. And I was just like kind of weeping over this and because I cry a lot. And
now?
Yeah.
You do now.
I do now. And I always do this thing in songwriting sessions, and maybe anyone else who wants to write songs can do it too. But we talk for about an hour, get tea, cry if you need to. Then I say, no, you have to say this. It's okay if we don't write a song today.
Oh, that's good. That's nice.
And then you're like, but maybe since we're here, maybe we separate now that we've kind of gotten this soup of ID. And so I like to separate and say, what if we set a timer for 20 minutes? And we just both see what might come in that 20 minutes, kind of based on the things we were talking about. And then we come back after 20 minutes and we each share each other our seed. And that does a couple things, because sometimes in a songwriting session, you can have a lot of inhibitions about sharing first, being vulnerable enough to share something either that you were working on before the songwriting session and you're like, that's kind of mine. But when you come and it's fresh like that, you don't feel ownership yet. And you're like ready to share and collaborate. And it's kind of based on the same conversation that you were having. And so we always do that. That's like my knock on wood. That's like, so far it's always worked.
That microphone's not wood.
Knock on mics. Anyway, that was a side note, but Maya and I did that. And when I came back in, I had started out the song The Archer, and she had started out the song Nothing Else Matters. And she had written a couple of the couplets of the verses. And I also always have a practice of going, let's work on whatever you started first.
Nice.
So I just record my little thing in my phone, so if we don't get to it, that's okay. And then we start working on whatever my friend started working on. And so we worked on Nothing Else Matters. And she was telling me, she was like, she was feeling empathy for my story. And she had a similar story with the Stray Birds. Because she also had a band that was no longer. And so we had a lot of empathy there. And then when Lindsay Lou heard it, she literally said, Maya wrote that with Phoebe. She goes, I think they wrote it about me.
Yeah, I've read that.
She was like, I think they wrote that about me because that's my story too. She had a story like that with the Flat Bellies. Yeah. And she goes, did you guys write that about me? Because apparently by the time she heard it, she had just had a conversation with Maya about her situation. And so she literally thought that's what Maya had brought to our session. And I was like, it's also your story, Lindsay.
Right.
And you can have it. She's like, can I sing that, please? It's my story. I was like, of course. And what an honor to have your voice on this song. Like, bow to Lindsay. You sing any song you want ever.
It's really great.
And what an honor to have you sing this song. And then I've put it on my album. And Maya has it on her album coming out now.
Yes.
And I sing harmonies on that version. And Lindsay's album just dropped with it. And so we've got three versions that came out in the last year. And we're like, all of us asked each other, is it okay if we all put it out? And everyone's like, yes. Why? What? We don't possess a song. You know, a song is meant to be played.
Yeah.
And then now there's, you know, versions of it on TikTok and versions on Instagram and people just covering it because it's their song too.
Yeah, it's one of those songs. And I can't wait to play it. We're going to make you wait, though, at least a couple songs. I mean, a set closer is a set closer. So I just... don't boo me. I mean... well, whatever. You can boo me. I just have one more question. Sometimes I do a lightning round, but I'm just not interested in a lightning round. But I do want to know, what would you tell your 15-year-old self?
Maybe just to believe in myself. You know, just believe in yourself. Believe that you do have a voice. I had a group, you know, going through this journey that you all just heard was a lot of years of, like, fitting into a mold that other people wanted me to fit into until I finally just had to break out and be myself and do my own thing. And while I think I needed all of those years to mature as a musician and find my voice and discover what it is that I wanted to sound like, I never thought that I deserved it. It took me, like, 15 more years of doing this thing in music to realize I had a voice and that I wanted to share it. And I think, and believe in it, and to believe in myself. And so I don't know if anything, what would be different if I had believed in myself in a different way at 15, but because I'm happy with the outcome now, but.
You seem like you have a lot of belief in yourself.
I really had to work on it.
And rightfully so. That's Phoebe Hunt, everybody. Thank you, Phoebe, for your honesty. All right, we got a handful more songs for you. Thanks so much.
What would you tell your 15-year-old self?
I don't know. I wasn't prepared for this part of the show. Maybe start saving for retirement. Shall we?
Sure, and you guys can sing along on this one if you want. It's like the last line of every verse just goes, nothing else matters. Try it.
Nothing else matters.
Comes up quick. It's the last line of every verse. But we'd love to hear your voices.
And if you could sing in three-part harmony, that'd be great.
Nothing else matters.
And if I call your name, if
I try too hard, if I give myself away, I don't need to see the sunset to know that we have parted. I'm weeping, nothing else matters. To know I'll always love you. I love you. Nothing else matters. I love you. Nothing else matters. But I just want to have good blood with you.
Thank you so much, Phoebe Hunt. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, Travis.
This has been the Travis Book Happy Hour Podcast. Thanks for listening. Huge thanks to Phoebe Hunt, Thompson Guitars, Americana Vibes, 185 King Street, and The Bluegrass Situation. If you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe and leave a positive review. It really helps us out. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at The Travis Book Happy Hour and online at thetravisbookhappyhour.com. And remember, it's okay to be happy.